Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Rebecca Green.
And I'm Ben Clemmer. Throughout the winter months, WBOI's Araceli Gomez-Aldana has been covering public health. We put the germaphobe on the flu beat. Araceli Gomez-Aldana, welcome to WBOI Presents.
Happy to be here, Ben.
We are nearing the end of one of the worst flu seasons in recent memory. Plenty of people have had flu-like symptoms, but not all of them have had the flu. Tell our listeners about the adenovirus.
Right. So the adenovirus has similar symptoms to the common cold or the flu, but adenoviruses are present year-round. They aren't seasonal like the influenza viruses. Doctors say it's especially dangerous for people that are immune-compromised, like infants or older individuals. There are also other viruses that cause flu-like symptoms, like rhinovirus, RSV, and the parainfluenza. Something to keep in mind is that there's no readily available vaccine for the adenoviruses, so if you have symptoms, you should visit your medical provider.
Just to clarify, are we seeing a spike in this particular issue as well, or is it just we're noticing more cases as more and more people think they have the flu and then maybe don't?
Right. So doctors say that it's especially hard to be diagnosed right now because everybody thinks they have the flu. Unfortunately, the adenovirus isn't trackable by Indiana State Department of Health, but it's definitely something that your healthcare provider can test for, especially if your symptoms are not getting any better and you think that something's just off.
By the numbers, Allen County has been struggling with the flu this season. Is there anything the listeners can do to make it so things aren't as bad next year?
So the CDC says things are beginning to slow down, finally, but keep in mind that the flu has hit northern Indiana really hard so far. In Allen County alone, there have been 20 flu-related deaths so far. So officials say the best way to prepare for flu season is to get the flu shot every year, and even if you don't get it at the beginning of the flu season, it's never too late. Of course, common recommendations include washing your hands and staying at home if you're sick.
Some of your reporting in February also focused on domestic violence. For those who may have missed it, the YWCA is working with teens?
Yes. So the YWCA of Northeast Indiana, they work with middle schools and high schools in the area to teach teens about teen dating violence. The WCA says one in every three teenagers will experience physical, sexual, or emotional abuse by someone they're in a relationship with before they become adults. So they have community educators that visit every school in every county they serve. The educators teach a three-day class titled Eyes Wide Open, where the students learn about healthy and unhealthy relationships. I spoke with Lindsay Durham, a community educator, and she said dating violence looks different compared to domestic violence, so she shows the students a video that teaches them to look for warning signs.
It's pretty much showing how unhealthy things can happen even with texting, messaging, Facebook status, just different things like that to show that it's not just pushing, shoving, hitting. It's a lot of other unhealthy things that are going on.
Durham also told me that the class is available to adults.
February was, of course, the month of Valentine's Day. Care to tell our listeners more about the Heart Gala from the YWCA?
I was so glad I was able to cover this story. The YWCA joined forces with the Fort Wayne Police Department, Indiana Tech, and Heather's Closet. They got together and they hosted a gala for domestic violence survivors. They called it the Heart Gala, which stands for Here Everyone Appreciates Real Transformation. Those that attended were able to pick out a gown from Heather's Closet, and they enjoyed dinner and dessert, music. There was even a photo booth. Terry Shaw, who's a professor of psychology at Indiana Tech, was the motivational speaker for the event. And organizers told me they created the gala to make sure that guests know they deserve to feel love, and they wanted to show the guests that there's plenty of love out there for them. It was a great event.
Araceli Gomez-Aldana, thank you for your time.
Thanks.
I'm WBOI's Rebecca Green, and I am in the studio this evening with Zach Bernard, who's going to talk to us a little bit about Fort Wayne City Council, particularly give us an update on the Electric Works project and all the financing finagling that's going on right now.
Yeah, there's a whole lot to talk about in that regard as well. Particularly what is happening at the city council level at this moment in time is sort of trying to figure out how a $65 million funding gap is going to be filled. Essentially, what the Electric Works project is facing right now is due to the new tax plan, there is the threat of some expiration of some tax credits that they had applied to the project. And as a result, that has sort of left a $65 million gap in the funding in order to pay for the first phase of the project, which costs around $214 million. So essentially what City Council is trying to determine now is how can we play our role in helping get the $65 million gap funded. What they're hoping for is to fund one third of that. So in order to do that, obviously they can't raise taxes. That would be wildly unpopular. Things like that aren't necessarily practical either. So what City Council is looking into to cover their $20 million or so dollars of that funding is to go through legacy and seeded funds. Again, these are just proposals. The important thing about what City Council is doing right now is that nothing that has been mentioned, nothing that has been discussed at council is considered binding with this. The shortest version of this is Electric Works needs that $65 million by May 30th. The city's trying to spearhead it as quickly as they possibly can.
If they don't get that, is the project in danger?
It is. That's essentially the status of it, and that's the narrative that's being pushed by both John Crawford and Jeff Paddock, both council members, bipartisan pairing who presented the proposal to discuss funding possibilities for Electric Works. They've been very urgent in their language in that if they can't fill that funding gap, the project might die. And the way that this is set up is, you know, you might be asking at home, if the city's trying to raise $20 million, where's the other $45 going to come from? There are other funding sources from Allen County and things of that nature, but the city needs to get its funding situated first, and that's been emphasized by Paddock and Crawford as well. They're kind of on limited time right now. They have to get this sorted out as quickly as they possibly can, and right now we don't know which way they're going to go.
What's the next step or the next deadline in the process?
Like I mentioned earlier, May 30th is what we're looking at as far as when they need to have everything sorted out. Obviously, if we think in the most basic sense, May 30th, kind of a long time from now. As of right now, they still technically have a couple of months to really figure out how they want to go about this, and how they determine they will be decided in conversations with constituents, in conversations among each other. And Councilman John Crawford has said they might not act at all and the project may die. That's what happens with a non-binding resolution that we're dealing with right now. So everything's up in the air, but City Council really does want to see this happen. That's why the resolution at first had passed 7-2.
Zach, thank you very much for keeping your eye on that and keeping our listeners up to date with the Electric Works project.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
This past Sunday was historic. It was the first Sunday in over a century that Hoosiers could buy alcohol on Sundays. Some key alliances were necessary to get the State House behind this measure that was signed into law on February 28th. Nikki Kelly from the Journal-Gazette joins us by phone from Indianapolis. Nikki Kelly, welcome to WBOI Presents.
Thank you very much.
What pushed Sunday sales over the top this session compared to past sessions?
I think clearly what happened this session is two of the traditional alcohol groups, the liquor stores and the grocery stores, banded together to support Sunday sales. In the past, liquor stores had always fought that. And the reason they banded together is they then agreed to then together fight an expansion of cold beer. So it was sort of like they chose one to support and then they fought another one. But if those two groups had not come together, it's anyone's guess whether that bill would have passed, because the same arguments of hurting an industry, one part of the industry versus another, would have definitely been a more major part of the conversation.
Were there any dissenting votes from representatives in Northeast Indiana?
There might have been a few. It appeared to me when I was looking at the no votes in both the House and Senate on the bill, they're mostly from just very conservative Republicans who generally don't vote in favor of anything that you could consider alcohol expansion or gambling expansion. You know what I mean? It wasn't specific to the concept of the bill. They just generally vote against alcohol bills, or generally vote against something that they don't like on that manner. No one said anything. There were just a few that don't get out there and support any new alcohol bills, much less this one.
We don't typically associate government with getting things done quickly. What led to this law being fast-tracked?
Yeah, you know what? I think the legislature's looking for a little bit of a win, and this is something that a lot of Hoosiers support, and they know that from polling. And also, the point of waiting for a bill to go into effect on July 1 is so that everyone knows about it and can be prepared for it. This is obviously something that's been discussed since last year, and actually for decades, frankly. And so I think the point was, Everyone knows about it. Everyone's ready for it anyway. Let's just get it done.
In implementation, who does this help? Who does this hurt, both in our area and around the state?
Well, I don't know that we know that. I mean, it definitely helps consumers who want the choice to buy the wine when they're doing their Sunday shopping or whatever like that. Even the liquor stores who the association came on board, I mean, they think that some of their members will be negatively impacted. The point being that right now they're open 6 days a week and they have X number of sales. Now, to be competitive, they would likely have to open the seventh day. That increases their overhead. And you know, a lot of people are uncertain whether the number of sales will increase or if we'll just spread existing sales over 7 days. So I think that remains to be seen. There might be some smaller mom-and-pop liquor stores that struggle with new competition.
Nikki Kelly, thank you for your time.
Well, thanks a lot.
A list of Northeast Indiana representatives who voted for or against Sunday sales will be made available on the web version of this program at WBOI.org.
Coming up next, Julia Meek sits down with Miles Fulwider and Cassie Beer to talk about the first artist signing for USF's Marble Lounge Records. Stay tuned.
Last night I had a dream. I was standing in the middle of my city, surrounded by all the people.